This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is a Techno Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9. Saturday afternoon from 5 p.m. via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen-live or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
You're listening to TechnoGaze, where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets and technology. I'm Michael, and in the studio today with me is Mark. Hi there, Mark.
Good afternoon, Michael.
And we have, all the way, via some very fast butts, Raina.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Some very fast what?
Butts.
Butts.
Some butts. On the internet.
Yes. Actually, this is just like Eurovision, isn't it? Come in, Raina.
Hello.
Or is it come in spinner?
Wellington calling.
Depois. Now, we don't want to steal the thunder of the Eurovision guys tonight.
No, yes. It's very exciting. There's lots of exciting things going on all over the world, especially in Europe, though.
Yes, in Ireland.
Ireland and, their marriage equality vote.
I don't think there are any results yet, are there?
Hopefully. I think we're expecting some numbers to come through at about 6 o'clock.
Great.
Tonight. So, let's look forward to that.
Indeed.
We should also look forward to Eurovision. Team Guy.
Yes, it's very strange that Australia's in as part of Eurovision.
We may as well be Euro-ish.
We're multicultural.
Yeah, why not?
And we have lots of good things on the show today.
Yes. Oh, technology. Is that what we're here to talk
about?
Yeah,
we are here with technology. And we're going to kick off with one of my dreams that has finally come true.
What do you mean your dream's coming true, Michael?
We'll talk about that in a minute, one of my dreams.
Yes, stay tuned.
And we're also going to have a look at how ATO has upset Uber with one of their recent rulings.
Yes.
Yes.
Uber, of course, being the car hire intermediary, what do you call them?
Taxi service.
What would you call them?
I wouldn't call them a disintermediation. I call them big minis.
No, yes. So we do like the word disintermediation, and it seems to be the case that, perhaps they're not so much a disintermediation, more just a...
What? Disruptor?
Disruptor.
No, I don't know if it's disruptor even. And after that, we're going to be taking to the skies with the Mile High Hacking Club. I had to do that. I'm sorry. I apologise.
As someone who's just spent a lot of time on a plane, I'm very intrigued by this this story that we're talking today.
And we also have in the studio a couple of researchers talking about a Microsoft research project that they're involved in, and one of them is a join member and volunteer.
Yes.
So that's coming up a little bit later on. And we're going to talk about the repercussions from the recent Dallas Buyers Club lawsuit. And they're not all bad, actually.
Well,
they're not too great, though.
Could have been worse, though. So we'll find out a little bit about that and see how it differs between some of the things that have happened in the States. And then the ZucksInternet.org has been slammed by the world's digital rights groups as not doing enough to promote net neutrality.
Can I tell you how much I groan when I see those ads on TV? Internet.org. You know, you're like, and people with water wells and so forth. It's like, really?
It's almost a little bit like the science fiction movies set in, 200 years in the future, and you hear the voice background, welcome here into the peaceful society and everything else.
Yes.
I think I've been spared those ads here.
Oh, lucky New Zealanders. I'm actually quite impressed with the stuff that we found this week around that, though. They've pretty much been like pulled it apart in a way that actually makes sense. It's not just ranty.
Yep.
It's actually, is this really what the internet is all about.
And do we want it to be like this? Mm. Yeah.
No.
Now, don't forget, you can call us on 1300JOY949 and leave a message with, I think, Heath, mm-hmm. who's on the front desk at the moment.
Yes.
SMS messages to 0427JOY949 and the old-fashioned email.
Yes, onair@joy.org.au. Which one's more old-fashioned, email or SMSing?
Or telephone.
Definitely telephone, I guess. You could have your rotary dial telephone and still contact us, I'm sure.
I don't know if they work, the old rotary dials.
Mm. Depends on the exchange, perhaps, whether they're still accepting pulses down the line.
Yes. Then, of course, we've got the Twitters.
Oh, new stuff, yeah.
The new stuff. At TechnoGaze.
Social media.
Yes. And don't forget our Facebook page, facebook.com/technogazejoy949. And we would like to welcome a couple of our fans this week, Kurt and Jessica.
Yes. If you friend us on Facebook, then we mention you on air. That's
oh boy.
2 seconds of fame.
Aren't people meant to have 15?
Well, we'll try for 15.
Isn't it minutes?
Oh, minutes. Yeah, okay, that's true. Okay, that might be a bit much.
Kurt and Jessica, thank you very much for being our friends. So it's we love new friends. We do.
And you know what? If you ever see any cool tech stories, chuck them on the page.
Yes.
Ah, yes. We do like to put our own ideas up there. But if you've got your own, then hey, mm-hmm. we'd put them through.
Yep, we'd love to hear about it. So my dream, or one of my dreams, I have dreamt for a long time of going to the shop and buying a television set that I roll up, take home, and stick to the wall with BlueTech.
Really? Sounds ridiculous.
And well, it ain't so ridiculous anymore. Because LG have released this prototype of a TV set that's less than 1 millimetre thick.
What?
Less than 1 millimetre. Can you imagine how it's like, I'm going to tear this.
So is this actually a screen? Like, is it a flexible screen? Can you actually roll it up?
Or? I don't think it's rollable.
Right.
It's just very, very thin. It's still large. It's 55 inches wide.
Right.
So it's a large screen. Weighs just under 2 kilo. And it sticks to the wall via a magnetic backing and is removable.
Hmm.
Could you also stick it to your fridge?
I guess you could. The world's largest fridge magnet. Yeah,
55 inches wide. I'd need to buy a new fridge just to cater for that.
I wonder if you can put several of them side by side. Actually, I wonder if they've got much of a border, like a bezel around it, or whether they go all the way to the edge.
Yeah. We should, as always, these big companies should be listening to us to figure out the best ways to mm-hmm. make their products better.
We should go out and invest and buy one, maybe. But I don't think we can buy it just yet because it is still a prototype.
Okay. So, but LG are on all over this, right? Like,
yep, they are. And what's interesting about it, it's made out of OLEDs, which are used in your mobile phones. And OLEDs, up until now, haven't really been able to be manufactured in such large sheets. Right. And the LG engineers have basically iterated through the design and the manufacturing process in 18 months what it took them 10 years to do with LCDs when LCDs first came out.
Wow. It's cool how everything just kind of progresses on when it comes to technology. Once they've sorted out one thing, we move on to the next.
And so quickly, yeah.
Mm.
It's really good. So maybe soon we'll get our roll-up or my roll-up TV.
Mm-hmm. There's so much other cool stuff you could do with that aside from TV.
Yep.
Regular sort of displays or anything, really.
Perhaps video conferencing and having that in different contexts, perhaps, which we'll talk about later on in the show with Bernaz and Fernando coming into the studio later on in the show.
We'll have to ask them what their opinion of that is. Mm. Now, Uber are not very happy because the Australian Tax Office has classified them as a taxi service.
They hate that. They hate that because they know that they have to start doing things like taxi companies do, like pay tax.
Yes,
but like treat drivers well, all kinds of other things.
Well, it's the thin edge of the wedge, isn't it? It's the start of the change for them. But they're going to have to collect GST from customers and pay to the tax office.
And Uber have traditionally, and you reference this, Raina, they've got a bit of a reputation of just being a bit bit bullish around their way of doing things.
Look, a big part of their model is that they really get off on not being like a traditional company, and they're all, you know, oh, look, our drivers are partners. You know, they're not our employees, so we don't have to treat them like employees. You know, they're all sort of, yeah, rah, rah, we're disrupting. Mm. And it's true. The taxi industry could really use a fantastically big kick in the bum.
Yes.
But maybe the way that they're doing it is not the way that the rest of us would like it to be done.
Well, I think there's a bit of give and take on both sides. I think, you know, the taxi industry is going to change, which is good for everybody, but Uber needs to probably change and fall in to some degree in line with the rest of the taxi industry in terms of how they operate and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Uber have this wonderful thing being an app that, you know, enables you to get very quickly access to information about drivers that are how long it'll take you to be taken to a certain place or how long it'll take you to be picked up. And as a consequence, a lot of the cab companies, particularly in Melbourne and I'm sure around the world where they've set up, they've changed their approach to customer service. It's no longer just a phone number that you call to get a cab. You now have an app that shows you the location of your cab as it's the way. So, you know, they've got that, they've done that. They've increase the competition to a degree where now we can enjoy as consumers better customer service.
Mm.
But, you know, the flip side of that is, hey, in order to be as generic as they can be across the entire world, because Uber is a worldwide company, they're trying to, you know, push back on any local laws that that don't necessarily fit with the way that they want to do things, and that's the problem. I mean, they work in jurisdictions that vary from country to country, different tax operations, whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
And the big deal with the ATO is that they want them to pay GST the way that any other taxi driver would, and I think they said they want to collect that from drivers.
Mm.
Is that right? Not just Uber?
Well, the driver has to pay, I think, on based on what the fare is, not just on Uber's cut of the fare. Because what happens is that for every dollar that the driver gets, Uber gets, I don't know, 20 or 30 cents, whatever their cut is. And so they, you know, it's on the full dollar that the GST needs to be remitted to the government for. But this, as you said, Rainer, it's exactly what taxi drivers pay today. It's no difference.
Well, and that's the thing. So the taxi industry here in Australia is regulated in a way that other sole traders are not. So if you're a sole trader and you deliver services that are GST-able, you don't need to take GST and you don't need to pay that GST as long as you're under a certain threshold of income over the course of a year. I think it's 75,000.
Yeah, that's right.
Taxis, though, are not taken up by that threshold. So they can, they have to accept GST regardless of their total income over the course of a year. Mm. And perhaps because it is a public transport system, or it's taxis are a service to, you know, facilitate transport around our cities, right?
So, right, because you can't sort of have a different meter, basically.
Mm. Yeah,
everyone
that's true.
Has to have the same metered fare.
And GST is included in the price of things that
I guess Uber are concerned of prices rising, which they will to some extent, but the taxi drivers will also be able to deduct things like, you know, the cost of petrol, because they pay GST as part of that, and some other expenses. So it probably won't come up by the full 10%, and it'll be interesting to see if the ACCC actually monitor how much the price changes when this comes into effect very shortly.
Yeah, suddenly, again, this whole idea of Uber meets local jurisdiction.
Yes.
Uber meets the ACCC, for example.
Yeah, look, it's a big pattern of things with them. They love to sort of say, oh, we're doing this, we're doing that for people, rah, rah. But when it comes to being treated by the law, like all these other ones, they're like, oh, no, we're totally different now, you know, and It'll be interesting to see as well. So the ATO was talking about Airbnb, as well, which is another
community. Or no, what is it? What would we call it?
The sharing economy.
Ah, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, but that of course is quite different.
Yeah, accommodation is slightly different to transport and the services that come from that as well. So,
yeah, that's
right.
We'll
see what comes out of it.
Mm. We have lots coming up today here on TechnoGaze, and very shortly we're going to join the Mile High Hacking Club.
TechnoGaze.
Download the Joy smartphone app now at joy.org.au.
Indeed, we are everywhere. And
you totally can. And I listen to Joy over here.
It's like you're in Australia, isn't it?
Oh, kind of.
I was actually really surprised when I was even in Europe that the lag on the internet feed for Joy is very small indeed. Like you're not behind by more
much.
Than 10 seconds even.
Which is pretty good.
You know, considering it's travelling all the way over to the other side of the world and so forth.
Well, I'm using this tool that we were talking about before, and we're talking on the same time at Skype.
Yes.
And it is completely in sync. There's no sort of weird lag on your vision at all.
Amazing modern technology, isn't it?
It is. Now,
moving
butts around the ocean. talking about moving in Europe and stuff like that, the airline industry has been a few tales recently of technology-related things.
Yes.
A few weeks ago, we spoke about the Dreamliner that needs to be restarted every now and then.
let's not be too sort of, critical of them, because it required the engines to stay running for 247 days non-stop.
Which is a record.
All four of them as well?
I'm not
probably
sure.
Probably all four.
One of them was, yeah.
Turn off, yeah, maybe. But
better than Windows in its day.
Sorry?
Better than Windows in its day.
You used to have to wait like 5 days and then you're like, okay, I need to reboot now. But yeah, no, so the latest news, of course, is around being able to hack the flight systems from the onboard flight systems from the entertainment systems that are on the back of every seat in a modern aircraft.
That's the story.
Mm.
But now, the story's a bit iffy, isn't it?
Yeah, so there's a guy.
It's a little weird.
There's a hacker, I think. What is his name? Chris Roberts.
Chris Roberts.
He's been claimed by the FBI as being someone who shouldn't be allowed on planes now, due to certain tweets that he's made.
He was actually escorted off a flight and told to make his own way home or wherever he's going.
To be fair, he did jump on the flight, write a tweet that said, should I play with the bit that drops the oxygen masks?
Oh dear.
Not funny.
Yeah. So, but he's also now said that he's broken into the flight entertainment system 20 times while flying. And on one of these, he was able to make the plane climb and move sideways via a laptop from his seat.
Right.
Yes. I wonder if he managed to somehow press the bell button to get extra service to him. I don't know.
That would be a miracle. Especially on some airlines.
Especially in cattle class, perhaps. But, it is quite serious because, I mean, you have all these connectivity, you've got a USB port on the back of every seat now.
Yep, and we have Wi-Fi.
And you have Wi-Fi. And it is claimed that, in fact, Boeing have come out after these claims have been released saying, actually, the in-flight systems are not, the entertainment systems aren't connected in the same way to the in-flight systems of the control systems.
And they're completely separate.
Separate. I wonder, though, I mean, there's a possibility of saving money by having just one internet connection outside of the plane, your satellite connectivity. Say it's beaming information back and forth about the engine statistics. Maybe, having two of those systems, one connection for cattle class and the other connection for
the pilot.
For the pilot. Perhaps that's a pretty costly thing to do.
Well, I'd hope they'd put the pilot or the flight related information inside a VPN or something like that and protect it. Because that's fairly common practice.
That's what Boeing says is going on. And one of the other stories that I read about this suggests that there's actually a different Ethernet port that he might have put his bits and pieces into under the seat. How would no one notice that?
That's a bit boring.
Wow.
But likewise, there haven't been any reports by pilots saying that, the plane suddenly moved by itself.
Right. People are saying that it would be very, very weird if all of his claims are true.
Yes.
And now he's all like, actually, I'm not sure.
And so, there is a certain element of FUD here.
As in fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Yeah, that's the one.
That just, kind of FUD.
Yeah, that kind of FUD, just, you know, just by raising it.
Mm. And there's been all sorts of people raising their hands going, actually, this is not possible. There's an in-flight entertainment consultant that has said that anyone attempting to hack into systems from their seat would probably have caught the attention of nearby passengers and crew. I, again, would ask whether that's in fact the case, because, you know, you can very surreptitiously plug into things, you know, below the seat. You might be just bending down to, you know, stretch your legs or something, and get away with it that way. I mean, they're pretty enclosed environments, aren't they?
These days, the seats,
It's hard enough to get your handbag out from under the seat, much less do anything else.
Yes.
And, you know, the number of times people come back and forth in along the aisles as well is quite... anyway, we should probably not go too far into...
Anyway, United Airlines, though...
Yes?
They are so willing to put their money where their mouth is, or get you to put some money, or put their money where your mouth is. I'm not sure where I'm going with that. They would like you to... reveal anything that you find if you are, you know, the security investigating type. And they've got free frequent flyer miles up for grabs for anyone who can actually point that out.
But this is not on in-flight systems at all. This is to do with their public website. They're saying do not hack our planes.
No, that would be a poor idea.
Yes. Now, I do question the value of United Airlines frequent flyer points. But anyway, that's another story, whether it's a reward or not.
So I think a free trip somewhere is pretty cool.
True. So they've gone down the route of the major tech companies like Google and Facebook and Microsoft, but they're an airline. So, you know, it's good to, I guess, follow the lead of leading companies.
That's one way to look at it. The other is that they're saving money on their testing. They're getting their customers to do it for them.
Yes. And that criticism was often levelled at Google and Microsoft in that, you know, why don't you do this yourself? Why don't you employ these people yourself? But there's only so much that you can, you know, employ the right people for. Mm. You know, having diversity and just having pure bounty systems, that works as well.
Well, the whole magic that people say about open source or open any sort of system is that you have the possibility of having all those eyeballs doing the work for you, and that's supposed to be better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is nice to have the sweetener of a few frequent flyer points. Maybe you could spend them on a hotel. Maybe you don't have to go on a United flight. I don't know.
I'm a hugely new activist for frequent flyer points, I have to say. I'm all over
the bug.
I have.
Now, talking about bugs in not such a nice way, Airbus aircraft, the A400M, which is a military transport plane, recently crashed in Spain, and it's thought because of a software bug affecting the engines.
Yeah, now it's a bit sad, this one, because it actually killed the four crew that were on board at the time. This is back on the 9th of May. It's a military transport aircraft. So were they testing it at the time? They weren't.
I think they were on their, like, accepting the plane as part of the run-in things.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, but as a result, Airbus have actually sent out an alert to customers who already have this plane. I was about to say productionized. I guess that's kind of a term.
They've already accepted delivery of them. Yeah.
Instructing them to conduct specific tests to ensure that the electronic control units in their engines don't cause any crash. So apparently it suffered a shutdown of three of its engines.
Yeah.
So the reports that have happened is that three of the engines, so it's a four-engine propeller aircraft, that three of them shut down during this test flight, and they were trying to get back to an airport, but they didn't make it.
Right. Sadly.
And the report said they received contradictory instructions from the flight control system, whatever that means.
After watching many documentaries on air flight disasters, because I'm all over that stuff too now, it doesn't surprise me that contradictory... like the one in particular, I just can't get enough of the the A380 out of Singapore, the Qantas flight.
And right.
There's a really good documentary, which has been put on ABC, but it's also quite easily available on the interwebs. It's a Four Corners documentary, and just the situation that they were in to deal with that, with passengers on board, mind you. You know, the engine just disappeared, essentially, and caused a whole lot of damage to the plane.
Yep.
And to recover from that and have... And the description of what the systems were saying, you know, this constant barrage of errors, you know, is amazing. And I just salute any pilot that can deal with that sort of stuff.
And that's where...
I think the amazing thing about those programs is just how complicated everything can get, and how it shows you that just one little thing can stuff everything up.
Yeah.
And the more we rely on software and on things that can be easily, you know, stuffed around with, I suppose, by accident or whatever, it's quite scary.
It's a matter of understanding the software as opposed to perhaps the, you know, which is a one step removed from the actual physics of it, perhaps. You know, I think the good pilots out there know both really well.
Yes, so there will be an investigation once the black box is retrieved, and hopefully things will be resolved and won't happen again. Now, coming up next, we're going to be talking with Bernaz and Fernando, a couple of researchers.
A little less straight than other radio stations. Joy 94.9.
Yes, we like to keep it a bit twisty.
We do indeed. Brings conjures up memory, thoughts of food, a bit twisty.
Yes, not that we're affected by advertising too much.
Not at all.
Now, one area we like to focus on here on TechnoGaze is how technology is applied in a day-to-day fashion. And for example, when we want to connect with others across town or perhaps across the other side of the world, like we are today with Raina, for example. It is in relative terms a recent development that we are able to both hear and see our loved ones in very close to real time. Now, we have many options like Skype, which was recently bought by Microsoft. Google Hangouts, of course, is another one. And WebEx by Cisco, perhaps, is another product that you might be familiar with. All of which are available and reliable enough to now start asking questions like, how do we interact with each other when we use this application? Or perhaps, does the context in which we're using the application affect the types of conversations that we have? Now, luckily, we have two very qualified people with us in the studio to ask us those very questions. Fernando and Bernaz join us from a joint research centre between Microsoft and Melbourne Uni. Welcome very, very much to Joy 94.9, both of you.
Thanks, Mark and Michael, for your nice introduction.
Thank you.
And Fernando, you're, of course, a Joy volunteer here as well.
Of course, yes.
Yes. So welcome to the studio.
Thanks.
Now, you're looking into the use of video conferencing and how people are branching out to some degree, taking their overseas conversations into the kitchen with them, perhaps even sharing a meal with other people overseas.
Yeah, absolutely. But the thing is that it's not limited to kitchen or, you know, the bedroom or living room. So we have observed, and also other researchers have observed, that nowadays the video call technologies have entered into different spaces at home. So it's not like that people will sit in front of the computer in a fixed place and then talk for, I don't know, half an hour or an hour. It's more like sharing experience, so sharing moments of their lives. Whatever they do every day, it could be having a meal, or it could be, for example, watching TV together.
And so also a very mobile experience these days as well, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So, for example, in mobile contexts, you can see that people will go out, and if they want to shop, do shopping,
yep,
and buy something, and they're not sure about, okay, I want to buy this one or the other one, so they will have a Skype conversation with, you know, their friends and show things. So do you think that, you know, this color is better than the other one? So, yep.
Now, when I use video conferencing, say, in the office, quite often it's set up in a in a location that is there's already common for meetings to take place. So you could say in a work context we're not too far removed from what we're used to when performing the task at hand. Perhaps this is where the difference lies when it comes to conferencing at home. Would you say there's a sort of a gap there, I guess, when you use, say, Skype? You're always in front of the computer at home.
Yeah, and also one of the important things that plays a very important role is the sorts of relationships, which is between people who are doing Skype. So, for example, when you're Skyping at work, you have a formal relationship with your colleague or your boss or whoever you are Skyping. Yep. So in that case, you don't feel that you're that much comfortable to share anything else other than your face, and you know. But when you are in the domestic environment, you absolutely want to share everything with whoever you're Skyping with. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, probably you would share the environment. You will have a kind of house tour if you have moved into a new place. So yeah, it makes it very different from the work environment. And and also, so for example, people share different things at home, and the mobility helps them to do it, which is not necessary in the work context. Mm.
In the work context, often the verbal communication is the paramount thing, and the visual is something that just helps it along, so you can read people's body languages for their understanding, not understanding. At home, is it the other way around, do you think?
I cannot say that it's the other around, but yeah, the environment plays an important role. For example, you can see, you might know, for example, people or couples who might leave the Skype on for an extended period of time if they are living far from each other.
Okay.
Because they just want to have a sense of, you know, togetherness. So definitely the Skype experience at home is different from that kind of work environment.
I'd say it's perhaps a primary function, say in work, is, you know, you're having the conversation to have that conversation, whereas in the home you probably just want to share some time with the person at the other end. So, you know, it might be, oh, by the way, I'm doing the washing, or I'm doing the, you know, cooking a meal, your favourite meal, and, you know,
And also the other thing is the purpose. So when you have a work Skype conversation, you have a specific goal for that conversation. Mm. But when you are, you know, Skyping with your friend or families, you just want to be in touch. So there is no purpose for that conversation other than, you know, let it go and see, okay, let's update each other.
Mm. Mm. It's like I want a bit of company, and you might not be physically here, but at least I can look at you and I know that you're every now and then looking at me and we're interacting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you've performed some research to date where you look at the way people use video conferencing tools in perhaps what could be called the default setting, or the default way you can use a device, whether it be a phone device or whatever. What have you found from that sort of research so far?
Well, so for example, in our group, we basically do a kind of exploration study to see what currently people do, mm-hmm. and then find the challenges or problems or places that we can enhance the experience. So we can work on that and enhance the experience. In my first study, I did exactly the same with video call experiences. So I observed participants, how they currently do Skype with their family members. Mm-hmm. And what was actually, it was surprising at some point, and not surprising on the other hand, because we were kind of also expecting that it wouldn't be only conversation. So we found lots of moments in the Skype conversations that people were not conversing, and they were kind of, you know, moving beyond talking head experiences.
Right. So sharing time with each other.
Exactly, yeah.
It more in a sort of just being there kind of sense.
So that was a very initial observation, but at the end we came to this point that how characteristics of technologies shape these experiences. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if people are using a laptop, because laptop is not that much mobile, similar to mobile phone, people are limited to a place, and they are less likely to, you know, move around the house. But when we had participants who were using mobile phones or iPad or tablets, they were more mobile, within the house.
It's interesting that the technology really dictates a lot of what you do.
Yes.
With the experience, I guess. And that's, I guess, exactly what you're looking into, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Fernando, do you think that in the future manufacturers of these mobile devices will have things like stands so that you can take your mobile phone, hold it, but you can also put it down on the table and then focus it on someone?
Well, technology is going further. And Benassis, a very good example of doing research that perhaps it will turn into hands-on experience in future technology. And, perhaps I can also talk about, because I participated in one of Benassis' studios, and for me it was really very interesting to know how I approach technology, and that because I'm very old, I see myself I'm getting very old. In my time, I used to be, sitting in front of the telephone.
Yep.
And now I do the video the same way.
Right.
I'm fixed in that place.
Right, okay. Yep.
So it's been really very interesting to know, if technology is there and I can do more things than that, I'll better use those resources.
So that's like a learned behavior, I guess, of
yes. For me, it was to learn about my own behavior by being aware of what the research that Benassis is doing is about.
I'd also imagine that if the device that is capturing the video and the audio disappears into the background, you're going to be less conscious of it and you will just naturally go about your everyday business as if it's not there and act a lot more natural.
Yes, I think that technology is that part that is that needs to be invisible.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What is important is the communication and the interaction between people.
It's amazing that, technology in general, and it happens across the board, but, and this is a good example of it, of how we're changing the conversation around how we think about technology. It's not so much about the functionality of whatever it is that you're using. It's actually about how people use it. And that's a very key difference. And suddenly the human sciences combined with, engineering in order to achieve, get a much greater understanding. Now, what would you say is next in what you're what you're doing in terms of research, Vanessa?
Yep. So, building upon our findings in the first study, we thought that now let's go and see how new technologies have change the people's behavior and interactions during the video calls. So for example, one of the technologies that currently we are exploring is Skype on Xbox One.
Right.
And there's a purpose behind that because it gives a new experience to people because the camera can follow them. So they don't need to organize the camera angle.
Okay.
Or, for example, the sensor can detect up to 4 people and it will try to frame the video to put everyone in the video.
Yep.
But, for example, in the first study, I observed that how it is difficult for people to manage, putting their head into the video.
Yep.
So these sorts of things that was different, that makes the Skype experience different, was interesting to be explored. So now I am trying to understand this by giving people Xbox One and asking them to have a kind of Skype conversation with their friends or families and then see how the social interactions and the environment is different from what we observed in the first study.
Okay, so you're actually looking for research participants, I guess, to help you out with this?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess you're probably wanting to monitor the conversations as well, or at least, sort of see what's actually happening in the conversation.
Yeah, so it's like that because we do observations, but it's not for example, I will stand there or at the time that they are Skyping, I will watch them. No, we will record that. So we will create a three-sided Skype conversations because we want to record it on our laptops. But then later on doing the analysis, we will come back to that data. Participants wouldn't feel uncomfortable about being being watched at that time, because that's not the case. But yeah, we are looking, for example, for a pair of friends or family members in Melbourne. And we will give them Xbox One, and it will be with them for example, 4 to 5 days. We will also provide them with games so they can enjoy, you know, using Xbox One and try it out.
Yep.
And also during this time, we ask them to have a Skype conversations.
Now, if anyone's interested in helping out, what's the best way of contacting you?
I think the best way is my university email account.
Uh-huh.
Which is
the first letter of your first name, and then
the initial of my first name and then my last name.
Yep, so it's BROSTAMI.
Exactly, at student.unimel.edu.au.
Yes, and we'll post a post up on our Facebook page for anyone who's interested in getting in contact as well. You don't have to remember the email address right now. Thank you very much for coming in, Fernando and Vanaz. It's great to talk to you about research that's going on in the industry.
Thanks for having us.
No worries.
All right.
We'll be back very shortly with some more news, including, Ironet and Dallas Buyers Club. That little rant session right after this.
Technogiz.
All day, every day. Joy 94.9 on air and online at joy.org.au.
You're listening to Technogaze with Michael, Mark and Raina, all the way from the other side of the Dutch.
The Dutch.
The Dutch. the Dutch ditch.
Beautiful Wellington.
Is the weather nice there?
It's very dark outside.
It's later there, isn't it?
It is. It's definitely winter.
Winter has come.
Yes, dark here as well. Dallas Buyers Club. Mm-hmm. What's the story with that?
Well, that's a movie, isn't it? And the movie is sort of well known in piracy circles because it was they set up this sort of housing company of sorts, I guess. I don't know what the correct terminology is, but they basically set up their own company to take people to court over the piracy of this particular movie. And they came to Australia and realized that they couldn't get direct access to the people's information who they had determined had pirated this movie.
And now, that's different to the way it is in the States, where they could get access in other places?
There's all those what was that law called?
The three strike law?
No, it's not three strikes in the US. It's actually DMCA.
Oh, the takedown, yeah.
Yeah, so I think they use a lot of those kind of laws to get away with finding people over there. And Europe as well has got a lot of three strikes laws in place where, you know, there's no ifs or buts. They just have to provide the information over to the big copyright holders. We haven't had that here, but we have had a court case take place from Dallas Buyers Club where Ironet and Dodo and a whole bunch of other ISPs were taken to court over them to actually provide this information. The outcome of that is that the judge here in Australia has found in favour of the copyright holders, and they must hand over the information. So if you downloaded Dallas Buyers Club from a peer-to-peer application, perhaps you...
You may be getting a letter shortly.
Yes.
That's right. Now, there were apparently 4,700-odd people in Australia who did this. Which is a lot.
It's quite a large number.
Yeah. The other aspect of this is that they've actually had to give the wording of the letter that they're going to send out to the judge for oversight.
Yes.
Which is very different to the States, where I think they just sent out whatever letter they wanted with whatever threats they wanted to make.
That's exactly right. They call that speculative invoicing. In some circles.
Oh yeah,
they
do pay a lot now, or pay even more later on if we find that you're guilty, don't they?
Yeah, and it was in the sense of lots of legal jargon, so the average person would go, oh my god, I need to pay this quickly, otherwise I'm going to be sued to oblivion. So,
and many years ago there was a case not regarding movies but regarding music where this woman
was basically fined hundreds of thousands of dollars for downloading the song or allowing the song to be uploaded or something like that.
Mm. Yeah. Now, in this instance, it might actually be a little cheaper.
How much are they looking at?
Ionet's got a blog post about it where they say that they suspect that the amount you might have to end up probably won't be much. Mm-hmm. It would be the equivalent of if you had purchased it legally or streamed it legally or whatever. So it could be as small as $10.
Well, that's not too bad from an end user point of view.
But we don't know.
Mm. There's also talk of them asking us how much we think is a fair price to be paying for having infringed the copyright, which is something that a tactic that they've tried in Singapore apparently.
Oh, do you know how that worked?
Well, it turns it on its head. It sort of puts the onus back on the copyright infringer to you know set the price. Mm. And I would suspect a lot of people would reply with tongue in cheek. Actually, it's worth whatever whatever I paid to get it, and that is zero.
Mm. Now, the letters are expected to, or the Dallas Buyers Club people are expected to ask for this information probably by the end of this month, which is coming up, so we'll probably know more about it shortly. Mm. Moving on quickly to Facebook and internet.org.
Mm. Right. So, internet.org, which I guess people have heard about before, is Facebook trying to expand internet access to the people in the developing world. Mm. And what's happened very recently is that there's a group of people who have put in a big open letter that says, well, actually, Zuckers, we're not that keen, and here are a few reasons why.
Yeah, so there's been a few criticisms of this particular internet.org, in particular that it's not a complete, you know, you don't have access to necessarily everything that the internet, as we know it, would have access to.
No, right. They're proposing to have a number of free sites, which will be limited, because that way the argument is, oh, well, it's better than nothing. But that's one way of looking at it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, would you say to Australians that everyone should be cool with whatever Telstra, Optus or Rupert Murdoch wants to dish up? Mm. No, you wouldn't.
No.
Why is that okay for the third world?
And kind of the premise of where the internet came from, you know, the development of it, has always been, hey, you know, this is a system that should be free for everyone. You know, there's even talk of it being a human right in the same way that perhaps water and so forth is.
Yeah,
so.
And the thing is, he could spend a bunch of money and time and infrastructure on making that available to everyone. But if you keep them all on Facebook, you keep the income.
Yes, it's remarkable how Facebook is one of these free ones that people are allowed to use.
We'll post a link
to the product.
We'll post a link to the open letter as well on our Facebook page if you're interested in the particular wording.
Yep.
Time is running out for today. But,
now that's a surprise, isn't it?
Yeah, it always happens. We'll be right back with more in a few moments.
Technogaze.
You're listening to Technogaze on Joy 94.9, and we're coming to the end of the show. Alas. Happens way too quickly, doesn't it, Raina?
Always does.
Yes, but we'll be back next week, of course. And if you've missed any part of the show, or perhaps you're looking to listen to previous episodes, you can do so by going to joy.org.au/technogaze. Up next is the 6 o'clock news bulletin with Byron, followed by A Touch of Pink with Dick, whose single of the week is from Bright Light. I had to say it that way, sorry.
Bright Light.
Raina, thank you very much for being here this week.
Thank you. It's so cool.
It's so good to have you back on the air again. It's really good. And Mark, thank you very much.
No worries.
And we will catch you all next week.
Bye.
Ciao.
Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.